Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome back, or good afternoon, I should say, if you're listening in the Eastern time zone to American Family Radio. Appreciate you tuning in. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. We're going to be here for the next 25 minutes talking some more about what's happening in our country and maybe an international story or two. Steve Jordahl from OneNewsNow.com and American Family Radio News has stepped into the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, Steve. Listeners. How are you doing?
See, by the way, those fires you were talking about.
California?
Yeah, in the West. In Northern California.
Yeah.
Are those still?
Yeah, they're still. In fact, they just yesterday I was reading with the AP that they have asked for help from some foreign countries. I think Sweden and Australia, I think, sent some firefighters into California to help.
Really?
With that. Yeah.
Is that a first? I've never heard of that.
I don't know that it's a first. International firefighters sometimes respond and help others respond. But, yeah, it's
okay.
It's a
the reason to ask you about that, that's not far from where you grew up.
The largest fires are probably 3 hours north of where I grew up. In fact, our church used to take a summer youth camp. When I was in high school, I'd go to Whiskeytown Lake, which was where all the
church group went to Whiskeytown.
I know. It was was sad. But the name of the lake is Whiskeytown Lake, and we used to go, and they'd all bring the guys in the church would bring their boats, and we go water skiing, and that's right on the middle of in the middle of one of the fires up near Redding.
So all these towns that are being mentioned in the news, you're familiar with them.
Some of them, yeah. Yeah, they're little hamlets that are just right in the way.
Yeah, but it's not unusual for wildfires to rage out west in the summer.
We seem to hear every year, we hear about some, but just yesterday, I guess it was, Governor Moonbeam out there, Jerry Brown, said that in the 100,000 years of human history.
10,000.
10,000? I'm sorry, I can't keep.
Of human civilization.
Of human civilization, it's never been this hot before. There it is. Yes. He said, and this was his exact quote, he said, the governor added that since civilization emerged 10,000 years ago, we haven't had this kind of heat condition, and it's just going to continue to get worse and worse the way it is. Some people don't want to accept that. They just outright deny it. I don't say it with any great joy here. We're in for a very rough ride. It's going to get expensive. And when I was in Colorado Springs, I lived there, we had two consecutive years of some very devastating fires in the springs. So
here's why. Now, I've said this before. Some of our listeners have heard me do this little mini rant, okay? But Jerry Brown doesn't believe that. Al Gore doesn't believe. I'm talking about climate change and global warming, all the different names they give. Here's how I can prove they don't believe it. If they really believe civilization was going to come to an end because of this, they would be screaming for no movies at night, no ball games, no absolutely no unnecessary use of fossil fuels, electricity, and so on and so forth. They'd be telling people, you shut your lights off at night, you get candles, no television at night, but not a single one of them will say that. Now, it could be because they realize they'd be voted out of office for saying it. But if they really believe civilization was at stake, They would be arguing for those things.
And they might decide not to jet around the country in private jets.
And Al Gore
as well.
Might not have three houses that use enough electricity to power a small town.
But that's okay because they pay for it with carbon offsets.
Yes.
So, you know, it's like an indulgence from the Catholic Church
yes,
today.
Yes, it is. That's right.
I can use as much carbon as I want because I'm paying for it.
Yeah. All right. That's my little rant.
There you go.
What else you got?
Today, in fact, just about an hour or so ago, Apple became the first company in American history to cross the $1 trillion value.
Would that be in world history or just American history or both?
I don't know. Became the first American public company to cross the $1 trillion mark. I'd have a hard time believing that any other country would.
Yeah, except for some of those Saudi oil companies, I guess, would. Might
maybe.
Possibly be in
I don't know if but, they're but, traded publicly.
Well, the point is Apple has taken over the world.
Just about.
I mean, they do have their competitors, but I mean, my word. between the iPhones and the iPads and...
You have Apple, Google, and Amazon very well could be the triumvirate of evil.
There you go.
If they wanted to take over the world, okay?
Well, Google that and see.
$1 trillion is close, I gotta tell you.
I'm just kidding. I'm just in terms of their reach and... their control over certain aspects of human existence.
Well, now Amazon, Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, isn't he the wealthiest man in the world?
He is, because
but the wealthiest company is Apple.
Wealthiest company, the one that's worth the most. If the stock passed $207 a share, and this is something I keep telling myself. And I was young in 1977 or 78 when Steve Jobs and Wozniak were in their garage about 10 miles from my house, 20 miles from my house.
Wow.
But if I could have, you know, found a couple thousand dollars to help fund them, I might be sitting here
wealthy.
I might be sitting here right now because I love what I do so much, but it wouldn't be because I need a paycheck.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just say this. Apple really owes me.
Yeah.
All these companies owe me because had I invested in them, they would have gone down the tubes,
right?
Gone down the tubes, because that's what happens whenever I dabble in or jump in. Goes bad, I can destroy entire companies by investing.
You put a record of that together and send it to the board of directors of Apple and say, "I'm thinking of investing unless you want to pay me."
Right. I'll tell you what, you know, it really is these folks that these folks that invent things like cell phones, for example, uncommon people, or have these ideas like Steve Jobs,
right,
or Bill Gates, or Jeff Bezos. Or, I mean, their politics aside, their minds work
at a different level,
much higher level,
right,
than the average person out there. And then to be able to take a concept or an idea, you know, which I guess a lot of people have. I've had ideas where I'm saying, I ought to patent that, you know, idea. But then I say, well, but the ball game's about to come on, you know.
Yes.
And then a year later, I go, you know, I forgot to patent that.
Yeah.
You know,
and here's this guy. Like, who's the first person to invent the first sippy cup?
Yeah.
When you think about that for little kids.
How about the first pacifier?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I just think that they these people in the history of the world. I do like studying these folks, like Thomas Edison,
right?
For example, or like the gentleman who created the telegraph, Samuel Morse, for example. These inventors are just Ben Franklin. Didn't he have more patents than any?
I think he did. Now, and Thomas Edison, what did he say? Inventions are 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration.
Right. And that's
so
where
to
I,
your point.
And another 10% good luck, I suppose.
Which is why you're not going to be able to invent anything, because you can't add up
anyway,
to 100%.
It's just amazing. It's amazing.
I think it's Progressive Insurance. Are they the ones, those Geico Insurance? Have you seen their ads out that they say as long as such and such and such happens, Geico will be?
Yes.
They have a new one out that just cracks me up every time I see it. It's in the middle of a theater, and they have a guy in a balloon. The theater is there, and then you hear a phone ringing, and then you look up, and here's Alexander Graham Bell with this big, huge telephone box with the thing he put up to his ear. And it rings, interrupts the play, he says, hello? He says, hoi, hoi, because that's what he decided the telephone should be answered. Oh, no, my telephone number is 1. I think you want 2.
He says, this is Alexander Graham Bell.
Alexander Graham Bell. My telephone number is 1.
I have not seen that. That is a funny commercial.
Geico's been doing funny commercials for a decade.
All right.
Oh, man.
What else you got, Steve?
Hey, I wanted to drop the other shoe here. I was listening to you guys talking about the New York Times and their editorial department.
Yes.
Yes.
You've been reading some of this lady who doesn't like white people.
She tweets about it often.
Sarah Jeong, who was announced, New York Times announced yesterday they had hired her to join the editorial board And now we have seen some of her older tweets just from a couple of years ago that'll probably get her fired. But this is not the first time the Times
has done this. No, and this is this is going to be very interesting, because back in, this would be in February, on February 13th, I'm reading from the New York Times. On Tuesday afternoon, the New York Times announced it had hired Quinn Norton, a journalist and essayist known for her work at Wired Magazine as the editorial board's lead opinion writer on technology. On Tuesday evening, Ms. Norton said in a Twitter post that she would no longer be joining the Times. Between the two statements, a social media storm erupted, with Mrs. Norton at the center of it because of her use of slurs on Twitter and her friendship with Andrew Auenheimer, who gained infamy as an internet troll. And so because she had tweeted out some what they said were anti-gay slurs or racial slurs, she was immediately fired. Now, if someone can get fired because they tweet out against the politically correct group, will they get fired because they tweet out against a politically incorrect group like white men? This would be a clear sign of the New York Times.
She's toast. She's going to be fired.
You would think it would have already happened.
Because I think even, yes, that's true. I don't think even the New York Times can allow someone on their editorial board who has tweeted the kind of stuff out that I read about in our first segment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just,
I read them too.
Yeah. So I think they'll, but the fact that it is taking a little bit of time, it might go to your point about political correctness.
Certainly you would have thought that one of the things that they would make sure to check after going through this in February would be the Twitter feed.
Yeah. I just, listen, if you want to go into politics or you want to get a good paying job in the future, you either need to stay off Twitter. This is just my advice. You need to either stay off Twitter or be extremely disciplined. Because, Tim, you and I were talking during the break.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter plays to off-the-cuff comments. The first thing that pops into your head, some of these people are tweeting.
Right.
You need to put a filter on that, or you may wind up, like Quinn Norton, losing a job before you can actually start it.
Yeah, I think Twitter, or at least I think social, I mean not just Twitter, but social media in general, as you say, Ed, and as you quoted me, it lends itself to instantaneous reactions to things that you don't even have all the facts on most of the time, you know, you can react to a ball game, for example, or whatever, but you're talking about news stories that come forth, you know, and people are reacting emotionally to something. That's just, you don't want to, I think on balance, it's not healthy for people just to let things fly.
Right.
Without giving it, a day to reflect or finding out all the information, or is the old saying, sleep on it. No, just something happens in the news, people feel the need to tweet on it immediately. And I just think, again, on balance, that's not a good, especially if you're a public figure.
Right. Or want to be.
And
you know, the fact of the matter is, with our family and friends, we generally are more prone to holding our tongue.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are tweeting about total strangers,
yeah,
people you don't know and you're never going to meet, you're more prone to just let fly the first thing you think,
right,
and then you can get yourself in trouble.
Right.
Maybe especially when you're tweeting about somebody that is a part of a group or in this
yes.
day of identity politics, if everybody else is coming down on this group like old white men,
right,
you feel a license to do the same.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. Steve Jordahl in with us this half hour. We appreciate you listening to AFR. Check us out on the internet at afr.net, afr.net. We do podcast all our shows. So if you don't have time to listen to this program or one of the other programs on AFR, we do have a podcast available for downloading on. Where do they go to get those? afr.net? Just go to afr.net, afr.net. .net. As you can tell, I do not podcast much.
I've just done it on occasion.
Only so many hours in a day.
Right.
You know? All right, Steve, next story.
Boy, in case you have been inundated with how bad President Trump is and how much people hate him, let me bring you a different perspective.
You've noticed stuff like
that? I've seen some people.
Some animosity. I've picked up on it, too.
Have you picked up on it?
I've picked up on it.
Well, this is there was a gathering at the White House, I believe it was yesterday, of some faith leaders and some African-American faith leaders in particular. And Daryl Scott is a pastor out of Ohio, I believe, and he said some kind things about our president. Listen to what he had to say. This is in front of the president and some other lawmakers.
And people ask me, why do I defend him so vociferously? And I say, it's easy for me to do because I know him. And he's shown me his heart, and I know he has a heart for all Americans. And I will say this. This administration is taking a lot of people by surprise, and it's going to surprise you guys even more because this is probably the most proactive administration regarding urban America and the faith-based community in my lifetime. To be honest, this is probably going to be the, and I'm going to say this at this table, the most pro-black president that we've had in our lifetime. This president actually wants to prove something to our community, our faith-based mm-hmm. community and our ethnic community.
You go.
Yeah, wow.
I met him.
Pastor Scott?
His name is Pastor Daryl Scott. He's from Cleveland, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
Anyway, I was in New York for the meeting that President Trump had with Christian leaders.
Yep.
Prior to the election. I think it was in May. I want to say it was May, like, whenever it was, 2 years ago, we were in New York.
2016.
The hotel was hotel by Times Square we were at. There were several thousand people there. And hosted by Mike Huckabee and Ben Carson. And the idea was to connect President Trump with Christian, they were Catholic and Protestant evangelicals, with the faith-based community, yeah. So to speak. And have an opportunity to ask him questions and get some interaction there. Governor Mike Huckabee was the one who was doing the Q&A with then-candidate Trump, but I was in one of the rooms that President Trump was, again, he was candidate Trump at the time. He came in with about 100 people or so. It was a smaller room, smaller crowd that he was interacting with was Donald Trump, and so I just struck up a conversation with
Daryl Scott.
I didn't know who he was, but he's a personal friend of Donald Trump's and has been for a long time, and
yeah.
He's a pastor in Cleveland, Ohio. Very nice guy. Enjoyed visiting with him. And then I think the next day I see him on Fox News, being interviewed. And I'm going, wow, I was talking to that guy yesterday, one-on-one. We were having a good conversation. All right, Steve, were you going to cite something else related to that story?
He's co-founder of President Trump's National Diversity Coalition.
What is that?
It's a coalition that President Trump put together to talk about national diversity.
Right. Okay.
Thus the name?
Thus the National Diversity.
Do they talk about, do they get together and talk about diversity?
They do. What they do is, it's a coalition that he put together so that he could have, listen to the concerns of the black community or other minority communities. He listens. This is what he does.
Okay.
No one talks about.
They call themselves a diversity?
It's called the National Diversity Coalition.
So It's I assume then it's a coalition of national diverse people
from around the nation. Yeah.
Probably.
Okay.
This sounds like an answer to a high school essay question.
Exactly.
Well, the National Diversity Coalition.
When in doubt, fill in C.
It's a coalition there of diverse people there from across the nation. Nomi,
don't leave that answer blank. A, B, C, D, and the teacher says you got 1 minute left. You fill in C.
That's right.
You got a 25% chance of getting it right. Better than zero.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That was my plan for my ACTs.
And how'd you do on those ACTs?
That was a long time ago.
And I
just
SATs.
Put it this way, Steve. I didn't tweet my score.
No.
All right.
Okay.
I didn't test well. I wasn't a good tester. Isn't that what we say about people who score, don't score well?
Not a good tester.
No, I just don't test
well. We took the SATs up into New England.
Yeah.
And SATs? Maybe other places that take the SATs.
Well, you got SATs. You do. Some states do what's the ACT, and then others do the SAT. But anyway, I just remember, you know, doing the prep class for that. And that person saying, "Now listen, when they say you got 5 minutes left and you got 27 answers to give, just start filling in C, because you got a chance better than better than no chance at all." All right, what else you got?
So Steve, I would ask you, as a Mississippi State graduate and fan, do they play Ohio State this year in football?
No, typically Mississippi State and Ohio State do not play in football, and no, the answer is no, they don't. Well, why do you ask?
They might want to this year because they're having a little bit of turmoil up in Buckeye country. Urban Meyer has been replaced, or he's been set aside as an paid administrative leave as of Wednesday, after it was claimed that he knew about some domestic abuse that was going on with an assistant coach on his staff and did nothing. That's the claim. Urban Meyer says he did not know about the abuse, at least the second form of abuse, the second instance of abuse with his coach, but they say that he should have known.
I've been following that story the last 24 hours because I am a college football fan. College sports, I've mentioned that before. I like college sports, but I really like college football. And, of course, Ohio State is one of the blue bloods in the world of college football, and Urban Meyer is a legendary coach.
And they're together is bringing success.
So that's why this, you know, you're talking about Ohio State, a top five program, and you're talking about Urban Meyer, a top two college football coach behind only Nick Saban. Urban Meyer's won three national titles.
That's right.
Two at Florida, one at Ohio State. But anyway, that it's a situation. Doesn't look good for him right now because he had an assistant coach that he had to fire a couple weeks ago, I think. And so the claim is that in 2015 that this guy beat up his wife,
right?
Basically. Yeah. And he remained on staff at Ohio State. And the question is, did Urban Meyer know he beat her up or not? Urban Meyer claims he didn't know anything about it. Well, now there are text messages that have come out between the victim and who was a wife of an assistant and Urban Meyer's wife. And then she's telling her what's going on, and Urban Meyer's wife is expressing concern for this woman. And the question is, how can Urban Meyer say he knew nothing about it when clearly his wife was intimately involved in it, in the situation? So that's the reason he's been put on paid, what is it called?
Paid administrative leave.
While they investigate further.
Yeah. So here's the question I have. With a coach of Urban Meyer's
stature,
how long does he stay? Say he gets fired. Say Ohio State just has to let him go. Where does he go? How long before he's back in Division One or at the NFL coaching again? Because talent will rise.
Yeah. Well, and people will say, well, he's learned his lesson. He's gone through counseling, and he won't do it again. So we're hiring. We're announcing.
Well, I don't think it's going to come down to counseling, although it could for the other fellow who was fired, who was the abuser.
I think he's out of football.
I think it's going to be hard. I've talked to an Ohio State fan yesterday.
Yeah.
He works here for us, and he said he didn't see him surviving this.
Especially
in this day and age.
I do want to just run through some of the top 25 NCAA for football. Number one is Alabama Crimson Tide. No problem there.
Shocker.
Clemson Tigers, number two. Number three, second team for Alabama. Number four, Georgia Bulldogs. Number five, Alabama practice squad. Number six.
We get it, Ed. We get it. All right. Have a great afternoon, everybody. We'll see you next time.